And for today's Dhamma talk, again, I don't usually plan anything. And as somebody asked me just before I came in here about talking about inclusivity and just how it can be so easily to discriminate, to exclude, and not to make some others feel that they're not welcome in your life, or welcome in the community, or welcome in society. And sometimes that never feels correct, especially for the LGBTQIA+ community, that I remember so many years ago giving a talk in one of the hospitals, let's just use that as the venue, and during the talk, or rather afterwards, during question time, this gentleman came up to me, and he said he was a gay leader of the gay community here in Perth, and he said to me, he looked me in the eyes and said, "Religion has been so cruel to the gay community." And he said it with such pain that to this day I've never forgotten that. And it was a criticism of religion. I couldn't see the reason why. And so it was maybe from that day I put a special attention on trying to be welcoming to people who are different. People who, because of their difference, created fear in others, and because of that fear were excluded. And as I mentioned to you many times, most of my stories you all know, but as a student at university, one of the things I was told by my senior tutor was, "It's a great university, there's so much to learn here. Yes, you are studying maths and theoretical physics, but please don't just focus on that core subject. There's some great lecturers here, some amazing professors. Go and listen to other classes and widen your experience and widen your knowledge." And because the course requirements were not so onerous in those days, and you had the opportunity to do that, to go, and there was this great philosophy lecturer, there's an also wonderful architecture lecturer, but it wasn't just, you know, academic subjects. We know we were all interested in so many different things. We were just young people, just learning about life. And so one of the things which happened, I had a good friend. He was also studying maths and physics, and he was quite a devout Christian. And so he had two friends, and when they mentioned that they were going once a week to do volunteer work for Down syndrome people, they said they were volunteering. They knew I was a Buddhist, they were Christians, and I felt kind of intimidated. And I thought, well, I better volunteer to go as well, just to fly the flag, you know, for Buddhism, so that, you know, Buddhists, you know, we're as compassionate as others. And so I volunteered to go there. So three or four of us went every week. They only lasted for 2 or 3 weeks. But honestly, no exaggeration, I went there for 2 years, once a week in the afternoon. And I loved it, because I learned from there about what it's like to be excluded because you look a little bit more different than others. Yes, they did look different. You could tell someone with Down syndrome, but they weren't less because of that. And in fact, after a while, you got to know them so well that I valued them. Much of their life was not expected of them. But nevertheless, they had developed other amazing qualities. And I said to you before, I remember just going one afternoon, you know, to help out there. And one of the Down syndrome people came running towards me and gave me this big hug and asked me, what's wrong? What do you mean, what's wrong? I haven't told you anything. And they said, you know, that you're different today. What's happened? And I don't know how they could pick that out. But the evening before, I'd broken up with one of my girlfriends. I never told them. They picked it up immediately. And I was really stunned that socially or emotionally, they were so sensitive. And I appreciated them for that. I was learning their good qualities. And sometimes, because other qualities were not expected or encouraged or taught, they had these other wonderful skills, which I really valued. These days, I didn't have a word for it in those days, but these days we call it emotional intelligence. Intellectually, they weren't advanced. It's a waste of time talking with them about quantum theory. But when it came to just, you know, your emotions and seeing how you're happy, how you're sad, and how that affects your life, some of them were geniuses. And that shocked me. You learned people were different, but they weren't lesser. In some cases, they were more advanced. Strange, but true. That's what happens to us these days. Sometimes we have what we think is our little community. We always think that we're the best and superior. But then there's other people who are not included in our group of friendship or group of people we know. And after a while, we find out they have enormous capabilities and qualities, which we love. After a while, you love to have them included. And that was like just with the LGBTQIA plus community. And to the point that, you know, you made a special effort to try and include them. Even as monks and nuns. Because we always have the idea, if someone is gay, can they live in a community of men? Is that dangerous? And then at first, I think, you know, there's a couple of people from Thailand here. They actually made it illegal for a while. But then I found a loophole because I learned the Vinaya. And if you want to know what that loophole is, it's a stupid loophole, but it was there. They said that if you are gay during the first 2 weeks of the lunar month, then you can't be ordained. But if it's the second fortnight of the lunar month, then you can be ordained. It doesn't make any sense at all. Except it was a loophole, which I exploited to the max. So eventually, why not? So years and years and years ago, you ordained as monks people who were gay. They made wonderful monks. I won't say their names, but they're brilliant. You all know, if I told you, oh, well, he was gay. They have some special characteristics of being very, very sensitive to the emotional world, and brilliant monks. And also, not just LGBTQIA+, but after a while, because you gave them ordination, you got to know them and hear their stories. What's it like to feel that you have to hide something? That, you know, you're not accepted. You're trying to live up to what other people expect of you. And you don't really just, because of that, after a while, you think there's something wrong with you. And that's an enormous psychological problem for you. And so after a while, You learned so much from them. I thank them for everything they taught me. And not just that, that some of the monks who I gave ordination to had other problems, who were schizophrenic. And that really scared me, because what I thought that schizophrenia was that monks would suddenly do weird and strange things in the middle of the night. And then, you know, because I was a head monk, someone would knock on my door, "Ajahn Brahm, you've got to come out. The fellow is naked, walking up and down in front of the Buddha, or climbing on the Buddha." And I thought, oh my goodness, why me? But then after a while, you learned that these were human beings. And there was something which I learned, that often they were fine. They could very easily fit into the community and behave so well and so inspiring. So after a while, you know, you gave them that acceptance and that kindness. With that acceptance and kindness, you find that any sort of behavior which was usually identified with schizophrenia tended to get less and less and less. And it became welcome members of our community. And some of those people who had schizophrenia, they still have schizophrenia, they're still taking things like clozapine. But now they're just very well respected members of our sangha, of our community. And you will not know which ones they are. I will not tell you, because I don't want to. And it's, you know, the monks are the same. The nuns are the same. So little by little, when you have that inclusivity, it makes me feel more at peace that, you know, whoever can live the life is welcome to live the life. Whoever's a good person is welcome to come into our Buddha society. And even if you're not a good person, you can pretend to be a good person for a while, then eventually you can stay here. You don't judge. And that's also one of the things which I learned. I'm very fortunate to have the opportunity to live in Australia. Because in Australia, you know, you can be a little different as a Buddhist monk. You know, you can do things which, if you're in a community of many, many Buddhists, sometimes people criticize you for. But one of the other things which obviously you know I did here was in the early times went and taught in prisons. And I still recall the reason why I taught in a jail. The first time was in Bunbury jail. Just a phone call from one of the prisoners inside jail. And he said, "Is that Ajahn Brahm?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You would not believe just how many months it's taken me to make this phone call. Now, applications of this person in the prison, another person in the prison, another person, until I finally got permission to call you." And he said, "Honestly, it's taken months to make this call. Can you please come to our prison to teach?" And it was true. Because a person had gone to so much trouble, then, you know, you go to so much trouble to help. So off I went to Bunbury. It was a wonderful sort of time because I had a free afternoon, and on that afternoon, it was in Bunbury, and I used to go down to Bunbury Beach to meditate in the afternoon. I'd go down on the Australind train, arrive just after lunch, and then just go down to the beach to meditate. And had some wonderful experiences on that beach meditating. I've told you many of them. One I told this afternoon was just meditating quite peacefully and hearing something whiz past my ear. And then something else whiz past my other ear. And I realized somebody was throwing stones at me. And I thought, "Oh, it doesn't matter, it's only stones. Nothing had hit me yet. Kind of protected, but not for long." So I thought after about 7 or 8 stones whizzed past, I should do something. So I opened my eyes and stood up, turned around, And then there was, you know, some school kids, maybe 14 or 15 years of age, and they were shouting at me, "Get off our beach, Rajneeshi." If you remember that time, that the man who called himself Bhagawan Sri Rajneesh was threatening to come to Australia, to Perth, and set up an ashram here. And his PR campaign really did need some improvement because he made many people upset. And these kids in Bunbury School, they didn't know the difference between a Buddhist monk and a Rajneeshi. So they were throwing stones at me. "Get off our beach, Rajneeshi." "So what would you do?" I stood up, turned around and walked towards them. And what surprised me, that these kids throwing stones all ran away. I never thought of myself as a scary person. I think what they were scared of was that somebody wasn't afraid of people throwing stones at them. But one kid, when he saw me coming towards them, stopped running and came back towards me. And so we started talking about what's the difference between a Buddhist monk and a Rajneeshi. And he said that Buddhist monks are just very peaceful. "I'm just meditating on the beach. I don't live here. I'm not going to start an ashram here. We live up in Serpentine. But you shouldn't go throwing stones at people you don't know. And that's not a good thing to do." We had a nice talk about the kindness, compassion and forgiveness of Buddhism. And all the other kids came back as well. It's a wonderful opportunity, like, to share, you know, what Buddhism actually is, and what peace is, what forgiveness is, what kindness is. And anyway, so I had a wonderful opportunity there to share with them. But one of the other things which happened on Bunbury Beach, which is a little bit more embarrassing, just one afternoon, again, sat down there. It was so quiet, no one was around, and sat for a couple of hours, nice and peaceful, nice deep meditation. And when you come out of meditation, you open your eyes, oh, that was nice. And I noticed there was a few people around. In particular, there was someone sitting next to me on my left and another person sitting next to me on my right. And I didn't notice they'd sat down, I was just meditating deeply. When I saw the person on my left, it was a 17-year-old girl in a bikini. The reason I knew they were 17 years of age, because they told me afterwards they'd just finished the last exam at the end of the school year. And of course, once the exams were finished, the school was just on the opposite side of the road, opposite the beach. So they changed into their bathing costumes and were just, you know, loosening off their energy, celebrating the last exam all finished. And I looked on my other side, there was another bikini-clad girl sitting on my right. And they apparently had seen me sitting there really peacefully, not paying any attention to anything. And they just wondered, what on earth is he doing? How come when someone sits right next to you, you don't even hear them? So they were just really fascinated. Bald-headed, brown robe, a Westerner. They wanted to wait, very respectfully, except the way they were dressed, for me to come out of meditation to talk with them. And so I said a few words, but I must admit I was a bit scared. If anyone had a camera, how can you explain that? Not my fault, I was just sitting there. I didn't know they'd just come and sat next to me. But that was nice. I like telling that story. That sometimes you're in situations, you don't plan them, you don't make them happen, but when you look at them, there's Ajahn Brahm, Bunbury Beach with his two floozies, one on either side. What's he up to? Because that's what it could have looked like. But anyway, that afterwards you go to the prison to teach. And all those years when I taught some of these people in jail, you got to know them. You got to care for them. And you find that whether you're LGBTQIA+, whether you've got some physical deformity, you're Down syndrome, you're schizophrenic, you're autistic, or whatever you have, when you look at the people, how many of the problems are created or exacerbated because people just reject you and they don't understand you? And that's the same with people in prisons. They've done some terrible crimes, they've hurt people. They've been put in jail for that. But honestly, does that make them a bad person? And I put my hand up and say no. They're much more than the crime which they did. And to prove my point, it's a wonderful thing which happened. We were teaching a meditation retreat at Jhana Grove. Many of you have been there. And the usual cook, the partner, had got a cancer, so could not actually turn up to cook for us. So at the last minute I was put in this situation, had 60 people all booked up for a retreat. I was going to teach it, and I was available. There was no one to make the food for them. So what to do? So I managed to get a volunteer to do the cooking for everybody. But I never told all the retreatants doing that meditation who was the cook and where they came from. This was almost one of the most important parts of the retreat, a Dhamma teaching I wanted to share with everybody, but in a unique way. And this cook, he was just so amazing. He did everything by himself. And one thing I always remember, he would make a pizza every day. He would make it, even the dough, he would make himself and just bake everything and put his beautiful toppings on it. He was an incredible cook, and he worked so hard. And everybody appreciated his effort. He was so kind and friendly to everybody. And so at the end of the retreat, when we just spread loving kindness towards everybody and have these wonderful acts of gratitude towards everybody, he wasn't there. So they asked me, where's he gone? Why isn't he here? And I said, he's gone back to prison. He was one of the prisoners from Cardiff Prison Farm. And they were shocked. What did he do? Rapist. And when I told them, people were, Ajahn Brahm, you let somebody who was in jail for rape come and cook for us? I said, yes. Because I knew he would never do that ever again. Some terrible mistakes he made as a young man, under drugs. I've known him for such a long time. He's a very good man now. And I did that. That's how you can teach people. When they saw him, and he wasn't told what he was, or what he was in jail for, they didn't even know he was in jail. And they could see him, get to know him and appreciate him. It changed many people's opinions on some of the people we put in jail. We reject them because some stupid things they've done in the past. They know they were stupid things. What a wonderful thing it was to give them the opportunity to cook all this food for free so people could see him and talk to them and see that how we judge people and reject them, marginalize them. That doesn't help them at all. And it's because of things like that, one of the, please excuse me for saying more stories, but these really meant a lot to me when I heard them. There was another couple of members of my meditation group at Carnet Prison Farm many years ago, and they were in there for dealing drugs. Not just small time, but big time. And they, again, one of them once told me, he said, look, now Ajahn Brahm, I won't lie to you, because they trusted me, someone they could trust. He said, I don't want to lie, but You know, every day I feel so guilty about what I did and how I hurt so many other people. I really feel that way. I know that, you know, some other people, I won't admit that, but I do feel that remorse every day. And then another time when I was there, he grabbed me when I first came. Ajabab, could I please show you this? And he took me to the schoolroom they had there. And on the schoolroom, on the notice board, they had all of these messages from little children. The government had wanted to do something to try and make sure children don't make those mistakes of thinking that drugs are cool and the in thing to do or to take. And the government had given all of these little grants or encouragement at every school to get somebody in to tell them the dangers of drugs. This is many years ago now, so I don't mind naming names. But this was Jarrahdale Primary School. Jarrahdale, you know, in the hills, a nice peaceful community away from the city. The headmistress there, the principal there, had decided not to get some sociologist or professor or police officer to come in and tell the kids what drugs are really like. Why not get a couple of the prisoners from Carnot Prison Farm to come and tell these kids what it's really like? And so these were two of my students from the meditation group were selected to go up there and spend the day with primary school kids and tell them from their heart, you know, what it does to you and how it ruins your life, wrecks your marriage, and just how difficult it is. And because they spoke honestly, what happens in a primary school after someone visits? They get out the piece of paper and make these thank you cards. The kids draw the images, and the kids have their own way of saying thank you. And they had all these cards there. Thank you, Nick, for coming to see us. Please, when you get released, come and see us again. We will never take drugs. Thank you for explaining what it really does to you and how it hurt. We're sorry you had to go to jail, but please come back and see us. And as he was showing me all these cards, this hard criminal Nick was weeping, not crying, but the tears were streaming out of his eyes. It meant so much to him to be able to do something to help others and to make sure that no one else would get into that stupid situation he got himself into. It was a beautiful thing. If I don't know who that principal was, but well done, thank you, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. A great thing you did for your kids, but also for those two prisoners as well. And of course, that was such a long time ago. I did meet that prisoner, Nick, a few years afterwards. I was waiting for somebody at Perth Airport, and somebody touched me on my shoulder. Says, Nick, do you remember? Yeah, I remember you. Nick, how are you doing? He was dressed in a nice suit. He said, I'm doing really well now. He said, I'm still meditating. Honestly, I meditate every day. He doesn't take drugs anymore. He's got his life back together. It's wonderful to be able to see that. So you're not discriminating against people. Made a mistake doesn't make them a bad person. It's a person who's done a bad thing. And that's why I've said many times, it's a very good example. Every time I've been to prison to visit, I've never actually been there because I've been sentenced. I tell all the other monks, if you go to prison, please take up a record of how many hours you spend in there to be used as credit in case. But every time I went there, I've never seen a criminal. I've never seen a rapist. I've never seen a thief or a murderer. All I've ever seen is a person who's murdered. I've seen a person who's stolen. I've seen a person who's assaulted others. I've never seen someone who kills. You know the difference there? You're not just defining a person because one or two things or bad things they've done. I've never seen an autistic person. I've seen a person who sometimes shows autistic behavior. I've never seen a depressed person. I've seen people who exhibit depressed behavior. I've never seen even a Down syndrome person. I've seen people who can exhibit those behavior. But I can see people, is that Down syndrome? Sometimes they behave so beautifully, so wonderfully, and have a lot of fun in their life. So one of the reasons why, and again I'm saying this, which I often say, that one of the best pieces of praise I've ever got in my life is not, you know, getting some sort of award from somebody. It was a telephone call which I got from a prison officer. It's in the jail in Canning Vale. They keep changing the name of these jails these days. But in that jail there, he said, I'm a prison officer. I've been in this prison officer for all my life. I'm about to retire. I'm getting old now. And he said, Ajahn Brahm, can you please come back to my prison to teach? You know, my response was, look, I'm getting more and more busy every time. You know, you've got journeys overseas. To let you know that next Friday I won't be here. I'll be teaching a little retreat in Hong Kong. You travel around now, and I've got many other responsibilities and duties and monasteries you're trying to look after. And so I told this prison officer, look, you know, I'll send somebody else. And as soon as I said, they said, no, I want you. And then I asked, why? Why do I have to go? And that's when he gave this wonderful compliment, you know, from the heart. He wasn't a Buddhist, he was just a prison officer. And he said, I've been in this prison officer situation all my life, and I've noticed something unique with you. Every prisoner who comes to your classes, once they're released, never comes back again. There's zero recidivism, is the word. Once you teach them, they literally do become honest, caring, hard-working citizens. He said, I don't know what you're doing, but please come and do it again. And I just love something like that. But of course, I started to contemplate, what have I done? What is the difference? It was very much by not judging people. And I mean, really mean that. You saw these people in jail for all sorts of stupid stuff, but I didn't think they were stupid people. You see LGBTQIA+, and just they're respected for who they are. They haven't done anything wrong or harmful. Someone who was who has somehow got ADHD, or who's bipolar, or who is all these other things which some people exhibit. We give this, I don't know what all these names mean there. Sometimes they're just letters one after the other. Do you know what they mean? I'm not a psychologist. But they say that somehow or other this means there's something wrong with them. And that's why I rebel. What do you mean something wrong with them? Is it some sort of crime to have a brain like that? And that's one of the reasons, again, why as a monk you get invited to many lovely gigs, as I call them. And one of those gigs was at the convention center some years ago. It was Mental Health Week. They asked me to give a presentation to the clients of the mental health system. And again, I got abuse and apology and praise by these couple of women who came to my talk. And they came, first of all, to tell me the abuse. The abuse was that as soon as I came in, who is this bald-headed, brown robe wanker who's come to teach us? You know the word wanker. It's a very abusive word in UK. A lot of people don't even know what it means, which is helpful. It's not nice. And then once I started teaching, they thought, very sorry, they shouldn't have called me that. And because they were crying and laughing many times during the talk. Because one of the things which I told them, doesn't matter who you are in the mental health system, you think that you are bent, it's the old bent and twisted simile. You think you are bent and twisted, you don't belong, there's something wrong with you. But I'm a forest monk. I live in a forest down in Bodhinyana in Serpentine. I've lived in forest monasteries in Thailand and stayed in forest monasteries in UK and many other parts of the world. And the one thing which I've always noticed in forest monasteries, there's never a perfect tree there. Every tree is bent and twisted. And if you go and see Serpentine Monastery, all the trees are damaged. We've had fires, we have a tree falls over this way or that way. Every tree is twisted, imperfect, damaged. So if that's who you think you are, there's something wrong with you, please know that you belong. Just like every bent, twisted tree, which may think it's wrong, always finds a place in the natural forests of the world. And just to emphasize that, to make it very strong, I tell each one of you that many of you have spent time in Jhana Grove, gone for walks in the forest, or if you don't actually visit the forest and monasteries, you see forests over here where you can go for a walk. It is the trees which are the most bent and twisted and damaged, which are the most beautiful. They're the ones I like the most. So I say, if you think you are damaged goods, welcome. You belong. I'm not just saying you're gorgeous, you are gorgeous. And that made people cry. Because they always thought there was something terribly wrong with them, that they were born just lesser beings than others, and that they were always rejected. They can't get proper jobs, they can't find partners in life, they can't find any peace and happiness where other people can. They think they're discriminated against, and fair enough, you are. But you shouldn't be. You all find a place in the forest. And as soon as you give respect to people, they're welcome, acknowledged, be your friends. They're welcome even to ordainers, monks or nuns. And they're welcome to certainly be part of our Buddhist society in Western Australia. They have a home, sense of equality and acceptance, inclusivity. Imagine what that does. Each one of you may know your faults very well. Each one of you may think that there's something wrong with you somewhere. Welcome. You also belong. And welcome to have you here as members of our Buddhist Society of Western Australia. That sense of inclusivity is an essential part of Buddhism. We chant a lot about, may all beings be happy and well. All beings, no exception. When you give that kindness and respect to everybody, imagine what that does. I was saying even today online that you give that respect to animals as well. If ever you go to Bodhinyana Monastery, see all the animals over there are not afraid of you. A couple of weeks ago, somebody left the sprinkler system on at lunchtime. So as I went to walk down the stairs to go to the alms round, the sprinkler system was still on. It was still a warm afternoon, a warm morning. And all the magpies, how many were there? Maybe about 20 or 25? They were all having a lot of fun. It was like going to a water park. They were all down there just messing around and, you know, putting an arm up so they can get some water there and the water over here. They're having a great time. I'd never seen them like that before. They weren't afraid that the monks came down. They just carried on having their fun, enjoying themselves. And I had a lot of fun watching them all. Just because they were birds doesn't mean they were discriminated against. They were welcome to play. It was a hot afternoon. If I had the opportunity, I was thinking I'd like to go under those showers as well. It was hot. When you don't discriminate, a lot of time the animals don't harm you. So many snakes I've seen at Bodhinyana Monastery. They're beautiful animals. I don't know why, but you see these are very dangerous snakes. And for those of you who go down to Jhana Grove, the big dugout is still there. It's a very dangerous snake. But he lives there, he's our friend. I know Scotty, the caretaker down there, took a nice photograph of it. Smile. And it got into some magazine somewhere. You know, you see something like that, and you feel that that snake is never going to harm anybody. It knows there's people who come and meditate there from time to time. As long as people don't try and make the dugout scared, the dugout just stays there and has a bit of water. I remember Bianchi always used to put a little bit of water out there for the snake to drink, especially on the hot days. So wouldn't you like that, to have a bit of water every now and again in a hot day? So because you're kind to the animals and you don't discriminate against the animals, you don't discriminate against people, you're inclusive, it makes a much more peaceful world. And I'm not quite sure, I did read one article once about schizophrenia, that if that people don't think that their visions are rejected, but you say they feel they're seeing like human heads rolling on the floor in front of them. Oh, really? Oh, make sure you don't get hit by them, it might be dangerous for you. As long as you value their perception of reality, and don't make them think that there's something terribly wrong with them, that their occasions of dissociation, schizophrenia, tend to get less and less and less. They don't feel so rejected and misunderstood by people. The same as those who are LGBTQIA+. People who think they're somehow different and discriminated against, when they're respected more, you tend to relax more and don't feel so afraid, and much easier to fit into a society where you are respected and loved. Welcome, you belong. So thank you for listening. Excellent. And thank you all for staying here. You all belong. Okay, so any questions? And as you may know, I've got no training in sociology, psychology, or prison psychology, or whatever. Just you got training in meditation and opening up your mind. Any questions from the floor? Yeah.
Yeah. And
Yeah. 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 Ah. Yeah. Great. Or just, be a bit innovative, not just a letter. Drop a apple pie to him or something. This is from your sister or whatever. There's something which is a bit more meaningful than just like words. Like this, one of those gigs which I did some years ago was they had an anniversary of the Singapore Mental Health Institute up in the north of Singapore Island. And again, they wanted me to give a talk that I was well known in Singapore because I'd say things which are different and which are interesting to listen to. And when I gave the talk like I gave here, this gentleman came up afterwards and he said he was the professor of schizophrenia in Singapore. He was the head doctor in this unit for schizophrenia. And he said, "Can you please come to my ward and bless it for me?" And then I just noticed he had a big cross on his hanging, a pendant from his neck. I said, "Are you a Christian?" He said, "Yes, I'm a very devout Catholic." "You want me as a Buddhist to bless your ward? When you get into trouble with the Pope?" And he said, "Look, no. Just I listen to your talk and I really get inspired by what you say. I don't care if you're a Buddhist or whatever you are, please come to my ward and bless it." So I went with him. But then I asked him the question, how do you treat, as a professor, the head guy, the head psychiatrist in that particular field in Singapore, how do you treat schizophrenia? And he gave this wonderful answer I'll never forget. He said, "I don't treat schizophrenia. I treat the other part of the patient." And I couldn't help but straight away I put my hands up, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Because even your brother is more than a schizophrenia, as you know, you love him. He's huge. And when you start focus on the other part of a person, not the person who committed the thievery or the burglary or the rape, look at the other part of that person. And then actually you can see something you can really love and encourage, that which is not schizophrenic. And that's what he was treating. And what's the results? I remember him saying, "Far better than conventional treatments. Water the flowers, don't water the weeds." Human beings are very wide. They have many different aspects to them. We focus on one part of them, which is a difficult part. And sometimes that's all the person sees. And the schizophrenic gets worse. If you focus on the parts which aren't schizophrenic, then that grows in your brother. Become much better. Oh, a question from Germany. How do you let go? Negative energies and memories and emotions, why do they keep coming back? How do I make peace in my subconsciousness? You don't make peace in subconscious, you make peace in your consciousness. And energies and memories and emotions keep coming up. It's a lot of time is because you are tired. It's one of the biggest problems of human beings in today's world. How many of you have had enough sleep today? Honestly. I know I can't put my hand up. I've been working far too hard. Have you had enough sleep today, little Mitty? No, you haven't. Because we are tired, we become vulnerable. If people didn't have to work so hard, if people had an easier lifestyle, then we wouldn't have these negative energies coming up so much. I notice every time I go on a retreat, I mean a personal retreat, you don't get negative energies. You're nice and peaceful and calm. The body is relaxed and so the mind is also relaxed. Yeah, things come up to disturb you, but you tend to laugh at them rather than just react to them with negativity. So first of all, can we check our lifestyle? Have more peace in our life? We may not have as much money, but we can actually learn how to spend less if we are more peaceful in life. We don't need to go many places, we don't have to eat so much if we're psychologically more at peace with ourselves. Anyway, from USA, question 2. In the meditation we did, the state of peace is a very beautiful, enjoyable state. Excellent. How does one apply that peace to daily life off the cushion, where there are distractions to inner peace? In daily life, if ever you feel that your stress levels are going to a dangerous level, in other words, you're liable to get angry or get sort of so stressed out you do stupid things, then take the opportunity to rest. It's more important you look after yourselves than you look after others in this particular point. Sometimes you say, oh, I can do this, I will do it, when you should really be taking time off. And don't ever think there's no place where you can take a rest. I was talking with Venerable Metta, was it Metta today? Or, yeah, Venerable Metta. He said his, was it father or grandfather, used to take the Sunday paper and spend an hour and a half in the toilet every Sunday? And he used to say that was the best hour and a half of the week. Well done. Can you do that? Why not? Sometimes we're embarrassed, but no, you get peace. And why do we need a toilet cubicle to find peace in our world? The reason is because people leave you alone in the toilet cubicle. If you put like a meditation cubicle there, that people knock on the door and say, you're only meditating, not important. So that's why, what was that story of that lawyer in New York? This is a guy from the United States. That, you know, he was a lawyer in New York when they had a death penalty for murder. Now, you know, you'd be electrocuted. And so that was a lot of stress if you were defending somebody and you said the wrong word, you didn't explain it properly, and the jury sent your client to the electric chair. High stress. And how he coped with his secretary, they spent an afternoon cleaning out a cupboard in his office from all the papers and putting them somewhere else. And that became his meditation cupboard. They put a cushion in there, and the secretary would lock him in for half an hour every lunchtime, whether he liked it or not. And when anybody came to the office or called, I'm sorry, he's in his cupboard. Not in a meeting or something, the usual lie. He's in his cupboard. And I would really encourage that. If you have a very difficult job and you're the boss or something, get a cupboard, clean it out, and get someone to lock you in there for half an hour, every lunch hour. And the secretary does that because he's a much nicer boss in the afternoon after he's been in his cupboard. And he's a much better lawyer in the afternoon after he's rested. He gets more work done of a higher quality. The next question from Hong Kong, where I'm going to on Monday. Dear Ajahn, I've been under so high stress lately. I tried to think differently, but it didn't matter what I thought. How could I relieve my stress? Come to my talks next week. We get many talks there. See if we can get a place on the retreat, which I'm teaching in Singapore next week. Hong Kong. Oh, Hong Kong, yes, thank you. Shows you how much stress I'm in.
Make sure you get on the right plane.
Oh, yes, true, I do. And what else? But also, don't try and do something to get rid of the stress. Learn how not to do anything. See if you can stay in your apartment, wherever you are, and just get a nice, comfortable pillow and use it. Have a good rest. Don't feel guilty. Everybody experiences stress. It's not as something wrong with you. And give yourself lots of kindness and love. Open the door of your heart to yourself. So that way you don't really think too much about the stress. It's just what happens to us sometimes when we're working too much. And you do also find that when you do take a rest, you get much more energy afterwards. Whatever work you couldn't do while you were resting, you make up afterwards by being more efficient, getting more work done in less time. That's how the mind works. I've often said, if there's anyone here who has, you know, a bit of funds in the bank and want to start a really good business, find a place in the countryside somewhere with a few huts and accommodation and do sleep retreats. You go to a nice quiet place somewhere in the countryside. You don't do meditation, there's no talks. There's nothing except a comfortable bed and a room which is perfectly quiet. And you can use that as much as you like, whenever you like. And you can have breakfast, lunch or dinner anytime, whichever one you want. You know, if you think, oh, I need some breakfast now, take the breakfast. It might be 9 o'clock in the evening. And just a place where you can just relax and have no stress, no pressure. Nothing you have to do, no things you have to live up to, just a nice, but also no mobile phone, no internet access, no TVs, just a nice bed. And I often say this, if I had one of those to offer to you, how many people would like to go? I put my hand up too. This is a place of relaxation and sleep. Simple. We make it too complicated by having counselors and advisors to tell you what to do all the time. You know what to do. You just need the opportunity to do it and be left alone. To be find peace inside. Anyway, thank you for all those questions. Anything extra from the floor? No? Eddie? You got a question? Yeah, go on. It wouldn't be the same without you. I think I'm taking you to Hong Kong because I miss you.
Ajahn Brahm, your good talk on inclusivity, you know? Mm. Yeah. The Buddha, he was well known, you know, for his criticism of the Indian caste system.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was for equality and unity, you know. Yeah. You know, like the world system now, okay? There's so much disunity, you know. Fear created, hatred, you know. So it would be nice if the countries, the big countries of the world, you know, okay, they can come together, you know. Think of the positive things like together doing research on medicine, this thing like cancer, all these things, and come together to alleviate poverty of the world, you know. Come together, you know, or, you know, instead of choosing the path of war and selling weapons, you know. Yeah. So I was just thinking, Ajahn Brahm, wouldn't it be nice if you can promote like hugging each other? You know? People, the, you know?
But trouble is...
Or if there's COVID, you see, we can have a handshake or even knocking fists, you know?
Yeah.
To show our unity. We don't want war, you know? We want peace and...
One of the problems with hugging, that I, if I hug somebody, that either I catch something which I shouldn't catch... Or sometimes people, you're a monk, that's sexual abuse. It's so hard to hug anybody these days as a monk. But anyway, get to your point. I think maybe you should elect me as the next president of the People's Republic of China.
There's so much that different countries they can offer, Ajahn Brahm, together, you know. For the good of the world, you know.
Indeed.
But they choose the path of this war, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's so sad. Every day you see the news, oh, it's good Lord, again, you know, and again this thing.
And who actually has to fight the war? It's never the people who declare the war. It's the people like, you know, your sons and your daughters, the young people.
In fact, you should be getting those people who want to get the war, get the family themselves and the families to be on the front line.
Whatever,
and see what happens.
Anyway, if you won't elect me as the president of China, we'll elect Eddie Ku as the president of the United States.
And Russia.
Okay.
Thank you.
So anyway, we now can pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. If you have more questions to ask, you can come up afterwards.
Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sangam namah.